Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick. Historian David Barton recently spoke in Decatur at a forum hosted by Illinois Family Institute and the group Restore Our Constitution. He's a best-selling author and founder and president of Wall Builders. Following his presentation in Decatur, Mr. Barton took questions from the audience and from me. We'll share a few of his responses during this edition of Illinois Family Spotlight, starting with his thoughts about the proposed Convention of States, followed by leftist indoctrination at taxpayer-funded colleges and universities.
Convention of States, I'm not against anything the Constitution is for. And so in Article 5 of the Constitution, it says that you can call a Convention of States. Now, people call that a constitutional convention. It's not. It's a Convention of States. It's a different thing. Has different rules. It is the means whereby Congress said checks and balances. If the federal government gets out, we'll let the states pull us back in. So it is not the same as the Constitutional Convention, which is what people often call it. Right now, I think 17 states have passed a call for a constitutional convention, for what people say is for a convention of the states. And so that's a constitutional process whereby you can propose amendments to the Constitution. You can't write a new Constitution. Article 5 says you can propose amendments to this Constitution. So those who argue that it will write a new Constitution, no, Article 5 language says you can't do that. All you can do is propose amendments to this Constitution, and they have to be called amendments. Right now, nearly everyone's gathering around balanced budget amendment. There are some that are trying to judicial term limits amendments, but you're going to have 34 states call for whatever amendment it is. And what that does is it forces Congress to vote on it. Congress has not brought up a balanced budget amendment in decades, or 2 decades almost. And so the states want to force a balanced budget amendment, among other things. But it takes 3/4 of the states to propose any amendment. They can do it through a convention of states. And that way you don't have to wait for Mitch McConnell and the Senate to come up with 2/3 of the votes to pass a constitutional amendment. 3/4 of the states can do it.
It seems as though Christians are increasingly coming under attack, taken to court, losing their jobs because of their Christian beliefs. They're being forced off of school boards, off of library boards. Do we need legislation at the federal level that would give Christians equal protection under the law?
No. The Constitution does that. We need judges at the Supreme Court level who can read the Constitution.
Okay.
I will point out that every state that lost marriage, traditional marriage, did so because they had an equal rights amendment in their state constitution. And the courts reinterpreted equal rights to mean genders or orientations or anything else. And the more language you give judges, the more they can run with. The Constitution's real clear. Inalienable rights pertain to every single individual. By the way, we call it the freedom of religion. It's not. Jefferson and those who were involved in the framing of the government, Madison particularly, said that the thing that the First Amendment protects most is freedom of conscience, religious conscience. That's what's always understood. We changed it in the latter 20th century to freedom of religion. It has now changed to freedom of worship. That is, if you keep it inside the church, you're okay. Inside the home, you're okay. But don't let it get out here where it affect anything. In the late 20th century, we're calling it it is freedom of conscience. And so because of that, that's why what happens with the Jack Phillips case this year at the U.S. Supreme Court will determine whether anybody can still read the First Amendment related to conscience. Madison said, government is instituted to protect property of every sort. Conscience is your most valuable property. So the purpose of government was to protect first and foremost rights of conscience. That is the first statutory laws that were ever enacted in the colonies were protecting the rights of conscience. There's nothing that's had a longer protection than rights of conscience. And now that's what's most under assault from radical guys on, and they are progressive left, there's no question about it. They believe in a living constitution that doesn't protect individuals, it protects groups. And when you get into protecting groups, individuals will lose their rights, and you will pit group against group as they did in France, and it's not a happy ending when you do that.
Your question, ma'am.
Okay, I have 4 grandchildren in college now, and 5 that are on their way there. And
you're paying their way?
No, I'm not paying their way. But I am concerned about them because the things they're learning in college aren't academics. They're learning social morals and things that it's hurting them. it's hurting our country.
Mm-hmm. Let me address that. One of the things that we have that we deal with, we have a network of about 800 state legislators we deal with, and every year we have a legislators conference in Texas where these guys come in. We'll start focusing on is education at the university level. Because if the state is paying for it, the state can put some strings around it. 3 years ago, 90% of all state-funded universities had speech codes that violated the First Amendment. Now, why would you pay state funds to violate the Constitution? This year, fortunately, it's down to about 49%. So a lot of states have started defunding universities who have speech codes or bias response teams or other things. Bias response teams are the same thing that Great Britain had when they call them Star Chamber Courts, High Commissioner Courts, and Admiralty Courts. You do it by hearsay. You don't get to confront your accusers. You do not get an attorney to represent you. You don't have a jury of your peers. You simply bring in charges. He said something that hurt my feelings. Okay, we'll throw him out of the university. That's what the Star Chamber Courts were. You didn't get any kind of due process rights. So states are starting to defund universities that don't give due process rights on claims made by students, even claims that I'm a conservative and my teacher attacked me for my beliefs. You got to have due process on all that stuff. There's two legal groups I know of we deal with nationally that they do nothing but defend conservative kids in college who are attacked by their professors and give you horror stories on it. Let me see if I can put perspective why there needs to be some control on universities at this point, particularly if we're going to use taxpayer funds on it. I don't want to use stereotypical groupings, but generally there is a difference between what Republicans believe and what Democrats believe if you read their platforms. There's big differences. At the local level, sometimes you get some good God-fearing Democrats and some wacky left-wing Republicans. Right, I understand. But as a general rule, what Republicans believe and what Democrats believe, there are differences there, particularly on biblical issues. So having said that, I'm in history. Right now, at the university level, for every one history professor across the United States, every one history professor that is a Republican, there are 33 history professors that are Democrats. Now, it's kind of hard to get a balanced view of America. Democrats don't like America anyway as it is. You know, they're the ones wanting to live in the Constitution, want us to get in all the global pacts, and want us to get, and they're globalist. I like America. I think it's a pretty cool nation. I would like to see it continue. But when one out of 33 is given a view of history that comports with America being a special nation, it's hard for kids to come out and think America's a special nation. When you look at something like journalism, for every one Republican journalism professor in universities today, there are 20 Democrat journalism professors. I wonder why media tends to lean left. Can't figure that. I wonder why they so like the Democrat Party. Can't figure that. Yeah, it's universities. Jesus said in Luke 6:40, every student when he's fully trained will be like his teacher. Let me take psychology. Every one psychology prof that there is that's a Republican, there are 17 that are Democrats. Now, let me go further. For every one psychology prof that believes in life, that is opposed to abortion, and that believes in traditional marriage, man and woman, every one psychology prof that believes in marriage and life, there are 333 psychology profs who stand against it.
Wow.
Now tell me how you're going to keep your kids with their brains straight going into that kind of an overwhelming thing. It's sending a Pop Warner football team on the field to face any pro team you want to pick. They'll get their brains beat in. And that's what happens. So unless states start demanding institutional neutrality and some hiring differences, because we have all sorts of studies that we deliberately exclude conservatives from being hired, including a lot of studies that show that you get fired and denied tenure if they find out you're conservative, that's got to stop. Otherwise, the universities right now are not education centers. They are indoctrination centers. And if you doubt that, only 27% of college kids now can get a job in the degree field that they have. I just don't see many resume requests for girls, for anybody who's got a degree in women's studies or in gender studies or in sexuality. There are 1,800 college majors that you can get right now, and most of them will not get you a job in the real world. And so what we're doing is we're sending kids into a situation where they choose something, they get indoctrinated, come out, can't get a job, and they come out, in addition to what the state pays, they come out, average student comes out with a debt of $37,000, they end up with a $351 a month payment, they don't have a job yet, and then it makes it hard to get married because you're in debt and you can't start a new family. They love, over 60% of kids want to start a small business, they can't because they're in debt coming out of college. And they don't buy houses. That's why they move back in with mom and dad, because they've already got a mortgage to the university. Crazy stuff that we're doing out of our university has to be addressed. So good reason for you to be worried about your grandkids. Hopefully we'll do some things legislatively in the next couple of years. It's starting, it's on the early edge, but you got to really watch your grandkids now and your kids. I mean, what we got in universities is pretty bad.
What can the people in this room do to help change that?
They can take those kids and grandkids and make sure they educate them right. What I love in today's culture, don't ever think, it's only me, I can't make a difference. Are you kidding? You probably got at least 50 friends on Facebook. Work them, you know, take them. Song of Solomon 8:13 says, your friends listen to your voice, so speak. I mean, don't talk yourself out of being an influence because you think you're not an influence. There are people who listen to you, and you don't know who they're going to be. I'll tell you about one lady in Virginia back in the 1740s, 50s, who had a student who was a pain. I mean, he was a jerk. He was wrong on everything, and she kept teaching him anyway, kept voicing, kept sounding off. And when he got out of school, he was a loser. Every business he started failed, and suddenly the lessons she taught him kicked in when he was about 21 or 22. It's a brat named Patrick Henry was his name. You have no clue who you can influence and who you can train. The Song of Solomon 8:13, your friends listen to your voice, so speak. So get materials, you know, get them to your kids, get them to your grandkids. Say, hey, by the way, you need to be vaccinated before you go to college. You need to know that right now, here's the orientation of the professors you're going to be speaking. So when you hear that stuff, you make sure you take it not with a grain of salt, but with about 43 tons of salt, you know. And you just inoculate them. You tell them the truth up front, what's going to happen when they get there, and then give them the name of those two legal groups that the professors give them a hard time for their conservative views. These legal groups love taking these profs to court because they win like crazy. I mean, it's brainless once it gets in court. It's really easy. So that's something that can be done. And that's thanks for asking that, because I don't want anybody to be discouraged over the numbers out there. Yeah, it's bad. So what? God's turned things around worse than this. I mean, look how many times he brought Israel back from the brink. No worries. It's a piece of cake. God can do it. He just needs people to get involved doing it.
Historian and author David Barton. After a brief time out, Mr. Barton will comment on freedom of conscience, the Johnson Amendment, and judicial appointments.
People are talking a lot about healthcare these days. There are so many changes, so many questions. As Christians, where can we turn for answers? Well, at Samaritan Ministries, we believe the answer is in Jesus Christ, working in the lives of his people, demonstrating Christian community by sharing each other's medical needs, scripturally, faithfully. Here's just part of Lana's story in her own words.
I love getting the monthly share that I give to each month that has a name of a real person and their real medical concerns and a prayer request, you know, for them. That I get to interact with people from all over the country, just like me, and get to pray for them and know that they're praying for me when I have a need. It's great. I love it.
Lana is just one of over 200,000 members who are sharing over $23 million in medical needs each month. If you'd like to experience what it's like to partner with other Christians for your healthcare needs, and you'd like to see what other members are saying, visit MySamaritanStory.org.
Here on Illinois Family Spotlight, comments from historian David Barton. Best-selling author answered questions during a recent forum held in Decatur, hosted by the Illinois Family Institute and the group Restore Our Constitution.
One of the biggest atrocities I see is the fact that pastors don't have a clue what the Johnson Amendment did for freedom of speech in the churches. Would you mind sharing that information and why more pastors hasn't picked up on the fact that President Trump was trying to get people inspired in that area?
The Johnson Amendment, let's put it back this way. You go back to the founding era, the British, the group that the British targeted most in the American Revolution were pastors. Pastors had the highest death and attrition rate of any group they had. When the British arrived in New York City, there were 19 churches in town. They burned 10 to the ground. They desecrated the other 9. They went across New Jersey burning churches. They went across Virginia burning churches, across Maine burning churches, because they blamed the American Revolution on the pastors. Peter Oliver, a British official, called them the Black Robe Regiment, because pastors all wore black robes. So the pastors were leading the military. Major General John Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg, same rank as George Washington, pastor. Leader of Forces, New Jersey, James Caldwell. The leader of the Minutemen was the Reverend Jonas Clark. So pastors were in that. They were the heads of the universities. They were often the ones who wrote the state constitutions. The Bill of Rights is signed by the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the Reverend Frederick Augustus Muhlenberg. Pastors were involved in everything. And so it had been that way. And then you get into the 60s and things start changing, 50s and 60s. Actually, after World War II, they start getting more secular. Lyndon Baines Johnson from Texas ran for the U.S. Senate. He was criticized by two nonprofit groups. Those nonprofit groups went after him for his softness toward communism, also for bad morals and other things. When he became the freshman senator, he was elected. He, without any kind of debate or discussion, had an amendment, a rider on an appropriation bill that said, if you're 501c3, you can't say anything about political people or politics. And it went through. Now, it was designed only to go after those two groups, which is still stupid legislation. You don't do legislation to retaliate against your political enemies, but he did. And about 10 years later, in the 60s, the IRS said, my gosh, would you look at that? That says 501c3s. That includes churches. We can put churches under that. That was never the intent. And Johnson's staff members who helped craft that piece said that was never the intent. It was never to go after churches. But that's what IRS really hasn't said that as much as groups like Americans United for Separation, Church and State, ACLU. All the secular groups say, oh, you churches can't do that. You'll lose your tax exemption if you do. And so what happens is now Americans United for Separation, Church and State, I think every year, they send 180,000 warning letters, warning pastors, if you put out a voter's guide, if you mention anything about this election pool, you can lose your 501c3. Newsflash, the only lawsuits that have ever been brought against them were brought by AU, and they lost every one of those. Yeah, you could lose it, and I could get struck by lightning while I'm standing here. Anything could happen. So what they do is they put fear in you by saying you could. Well, that's right. And it could be that the sun starts coming up in the west and going down in the east. It could be, you know. So what happens is now parishioners, preacher, you can't talk about that. We'll lose our tax exemption. So there's a group called Alliance Defending Freedom, called the Pulpit Freedom Initiative, started about 8 years ago, rounded up a bunch of pastors willing to get up in the pulpit and specifically violate the IRS code. And I remember one of the pastors, great guy, Gus Booth, out of a work community church in Minnesota, little bitty community church, tiny church. He went out that morning to preach a sermon about politics because it was primary season, and he said, all right, we've got people running here. Here's what the Bible says about life. Here's what these candidates say about life. Here's what the Bible says about me. He took all the biblical issues, hit it, and called the candidates by name and said, here's their positions on their website. All he did was inform people. That's supposed to be a violation of IRS policy. So that morning, we made sure the media knew what he was going to do, along with about 40 other guys. And that morning, when he walked out, on the front pew sitting there was HBO, and CNN, and ABC. He's never seen a camera in his life, and he's got three national networks filming it right there. So he gets done, we take his sermon, we send it to the IRS, say, you gotta get this guy, he crossed the line, this is and we did it because we had a lawsuit waiting on our side because he's got the First Amendment right of freedom of speech, he's got the First Amendment right of freedom of association, he's got the First Amendment right of freedom of religion. So we would love to have the IRS go to court against us on this because we'll knock them in the teeth with it. So that's why there were 40 guys that crossed the line. The ADF did legal training with them, showed them what to do. We turned all 40 into the IRS. IRS has 6 months to make a determination. 18 months later, they came back and said, nah, we don't think we care about it. It's okay, go ahead. I said, all right, let's see if we can get more. So I think the next year went from like 40, it went to like 80 or something. So we turned all those guys in. The next year it went to like 120. We turned all of them in. Last year it was more than 7,000 guys got turned in. IRS still won't come after them. Why? Because they know that if they get in court, they will get their teeth beat in. Even in liberal courts, we can win this. It's just easy stuff. So the perception, it's called the fiction of the law. We perceive the law to say we can't talk about this stuff in church. That's a fiction of the law. You know, it's like believing the world's flat. If you believe that, you're not going to sell out the edge. Stupid belief. Same thing to believe the IRS can control what the church says. So that's the 501c3. It's called the Johnson Amendment. President Trump has said we want that gone. Churches shouldn't lose their freedom of speech just because they're religious. Unions have freedom of speech. Everybody else has freedom of speech. So now, what President Trump does will not change the law on it because you already have freedom of speech. But it will change the perception of people, and you now won't get your brains beat in by your own parishioners who say, oh, pastor, you can't talk about that abortion in the pulpit. That's political. Yes, I can. I can talk about that at any point in time because the Bible talks about it, and I've got free speech, and history talks about it, and everything else. So that's what Trump is trying to do, is get that onerous thing off of our brain where we're free to have free speech again.
All right. Lightning round. Quick response. Who would be a good replacement for Anthony Kennedy on the U.S. Supreme Court?
Mike Lee. If I had a choice, I would choose Mike Lee.
Okay.
Mike would be my choice. There's about 145 judicial vacancies that are out there on the lower court, and 99.2% or 99.3% of cases never make the U.S. Supreme Court. So most decisions are final at the lower courts. So Trump put Gorsuch on, and Gorsuch, I can tell you stuff about Gorsuch, makes him phenomenal. But aside from that, you've got these 140-some. Trump made his eighth batch of judicial nominations. That now makes about 78, 80 guys have been nominated. And there are so many of my friends in those batches. I can't tell you how good these nominations are that are coming forward. They're guys who know they know the Constitution. They defend the Constitution. They read the Constitution. They apply the Constitution. They understand the separation of powers vertically, horizontally. And that's the farm team for Supreme Court, is those kind of guys right there. So we're starting to get the good guys on there. You will see over the next 3 to 5 years massive changes happening at the local level because these district judges that are out there will start giving different decisions. We're starting to take back some of the courts of appeals with good guys. Fifth Circuit, we lost the Fifth Circuit. They're now wacky. We just made two nominations to get the Fifth Circuit back. So it's going to start turning, but I think Mike Lee would be one guy I'd put on the Supreme Court.
How do people connect with Wall Builders? How do they get involved?
Wallbuilders.com, and by the way, we are not part of building the wall on the southern border between Texas and Mexico. It comes from the Bible book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah 2:17, where Nehemiah says, look at the distress we're in. Let's rebuild the walls that will no longer be a reproach. And it's figuratively rebuilding the things that once made us great. The book of Nehemiah is the largest grassroots effort in the Bible. So what we do is we consider ourselves an ammunition depot. We supply ammunition for everybody else to shoot. We dig the stuff out of history on whatever topic it is, whatever issue it is, military history or civil rights history or church history or whatever. You can take it and use it and share it with others. We've got a lot of curriculum that's available for, we have a lot of universities that use our curriculums. We have homeschool and Christian school and even public schools use curriculum that we have. So you can take and teach yourself, you can take and teach others. We have a lot of networking where we can get you involved in stuff. Go to our website. We can link you to political groups or life groups or legal groups or whatever it is. Whatever God's put in your heart as your part of the wall to rebuild, we try to connect you to that entity. So wallbuilders.com, again, those resources, that's ammunition. Take what will help you and take it and go out and inform others with it.
Last question. If the Founding Fathers were alive today, what would they be tweeting?
You did say lightning round on this. I think the first thing they would tweet is, I wonder how long America lasted before it went under. Because if they came back today, they wouldn't believe this is the America they left us. They came back today, they said, whoa. The America we gave you never allowed court justices to have the final word. You did see that in the Constitution, it did not give lifetime appointments. The Constitution specifically does not permit lifetime appointments. How come we're all told federal judges get lifetime? They said, didn't you read Article 3 for yourself? No lifetime appointments. You get only for the duration of good behavior. First time a judge tried to overturn a law of Congress back in their day, they threw him off the federal court. They would say, this can't be the same nation we left you guys. There's five judicial myths that we believe today, that federal judges have lifetime appointments, et cetera. That would be the first thing they would be amazed at, that we let judges make policy, not the people. So, and if you're interested in that, we've got a piece called Five Judicial Myths that goes to the constitutional side, but I think that's what they would tweet is, this isn't the country he gave you, how long did it last before it went under? But it can be the country again. It can go back in the right principles. Hopefully we've gotten rid of all the warts we had from back then, and we can go back to the good things and keep the good things.
Historian and author David Barton on Illinois Family Spotlight. Find out more about Mr. Barton and his work at wallbuilders.com. A special thanks to Pam Johnson with Restore Our Constitution for helping make the special event with David Barton possible. Be sure to visit roc-usa.net for information about Restore Our Constitution. Until next time, tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight, and God bless. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.